Turn on Allen Parkway, then march to Eleanor Tinsley Park. Be there. Together, we are stronger. This is Pacifica Radio, 90.1 KPFT, Houston. Radio for peace.
Cool beat of Clouds Below Your Knees by Ray Lynch signals 8 p.m. Thursday. And time for So What's Your Story, the only program originating in Houston devoted to storytelling, and it's only right here on listener-sponsored KPFT 90.1 FM. I'm your host, Hank Rubicek, and it was not quite smart enough, but I finally got smart enough to get the best team on radio. Greg Audell, Warren Holloman, Mary Edgerton. Standout guest hosts like Eric Heen, who's sitting right next to me, Christy Gorman and Harwood Taylor, Paul Topikian, and ace engineer Tatiana Gago and her protege, Justin O'Neill. Wow, what a group. Real village. We celebrate the power of story by placing the spotlight on tellers who take us on astonishing journeys before returning us safely to the present. Look, I'm a worrywart. My grandmother used to claim that if I didn't stop worrying, I'd end up in a place called Chelm, a mythical village populated by fools and apparently worrisome fools like me. Maybe it's best to give you an example of a member of the mythical Chelm community. Here's a young man. His name is Chaim Yankel, and he's a typical member. Chaim Yankel, a resident of Chelm, made his neighbors proud by being the first member of his town to be accepted into medical school. While making rounds, the doctor points out an x-ray to a group of the medical students. "Ah, you can see," he says. The patient limps because his left fibula and tibia are radically arched. Chaim Yankel says, "Well, what would you do in this case?" "I don't know, Chaim. What would you do?" He ponders, Chaim Yankel does, and he says, "I suppose I'd limp too." Okay, yeah, very good. Okay, you like that one? One more before we get a real storyteller on the air. Chaim Yankel called the doctor a Chelm and shouted frantically into the phone, "My wife is pregnant, and her contractions are only 2 minutes apart." "Is this her first child?" the doctor asked. "What kind of question is that?" Chaim Yankel shouted. "This is her husband." Okay, so there you go. Now that tells you a little bit about Chaim Yankel and the entire community of Chelm. But, you know, Chelm was also a very real city, and we're going to talk about that later. But the real kicker is that Chelm was a real city in eastern Poland, populated with some 60,000 people. A few months ago, my friend Rabbi Seymour Rosell shared a few stories from his book, The Wise Folk of Chelm. And tonight, our very special guest, one of the best storytellers on the planet and maybe other planets, Joel Ben Izzy, has returned to tell a few chosen tales, each laced with humor and fueled by images conveyed through what is arguably the most expressive language found in human civilization, Yiddish. In short, tonight, we're all going to discover the healing power of laughter. Eric, you recruited Joel, so why don't you tell us a little bit about him?
I'd love to, Dr. Hank. Joel Ben Izzy started his career after graduating with a degree in English and storytelling from Stanford in 1983. After a year performing in the Bay Area, he set off to travel the world, collecting and telling stories to a range of audiences in a variety of countries and towns. In 1991, Joel produced his first recording, Stories from Far Away, which won the Parents' Choice Gold Award. He produced six more recordings, all winning awards from Parents' Choice to Napa Gold Award and a starred review from Booklist magazine.
You know, I just listened to one of Joel's CDs, The Green Hand, which is a collection of adventures from Joel's first job as a storyteller at a haunted camp outside of Rome. Now, he's told stories in more than a dozen countries and serves as a story coach to countless industries. And we are thrilled to have him back because even on the phone, he's got a way of being physically present. Joel, are you there?
I am physically present.
Right. Hey, good. Hey, you know, I was so paranoid about having some kind of glitch. Honest to God, it's the truth. I brought your CDs. I brought your book. I brought everything I could to kind of fill in, which I would never be able to do. But there was no way we were not going to have a Joel Ben-Izzy tonight. How you doing?
You're a warrior, like a Helmite.
Oh, boy. You have no idea how much I worry. No idea. A real Helmite. Thank you very much. That's nice to know. Nice to know that I'm a Helmite. In the meantime, Joel, why don't you start us off a little bit with stories about the wisdom of Chalm and how Yiddish serves as a vehicle for unleashing the power of humor.
Oh, I'd love to do that. You know, I was thinking about Chalm recently and about Yiddish. What I love about Yiddish is that every word has a story behind it. And you just scratch the surface and you start with one word and it leads to another. Like a favorite Yiddish word of mine is shlemiel. Right, which people have probably heard before, but the technical definition of a shlemiel is someone who falls on his back and breaks his nose. So that's a shlemiel. So you could take a little bit further and you define it in context. You say, well, if you have a shlemiel and a shlemazel in the restaurant, the shlemiel is going to be the waiter. And the shlemiel is going to be the waiter, and shlemiel is going to be carrying a bowl of soup. And then the shlemiel is going to trip, and the soup is going to spill. And the one who the soup spills on, that's the shlemazel.
Beautiful. Right. Well, now we know the relationship. Now, a lot of us, you know, a lot of us boomers know about Laverne and Shirley, and we know that's the song they used, right?
Shlemiel, shlemazel, Hostel Huff Incorporated.
Exactly. Who is the shlemiel in that dyad? Do we know? Or do we care?
I don't know that I care.
We don't really care.
But I do know that it's sort of, there's a whole series that comes from it. You can see the beauty of Yiddish. And just, you start with shlemiel. So the shlemiel spills the soup, and the soup lands on the shlemazel. It's the digressions that make it good. For example, the shlemiel spills the soup lands on the shlemazel. He also falls on the shlemazel and breaks his glasses.
Of course, yes.
Seated next to the shlemazel is somebody who says, oh, I see your glasses are broken. You know, I could fix it if I had one of those screwdriver kits. And I used to have one, but I lost it, so I can't fix it. That is the nebbish. And seated next to the nebbish is the guy who says, you know, that looks good. I'll have the same. That's the nudnik. And nudnik is actually Yinglish, for Yiddish English. It's short for no goodnik. It wasn't a Yiddish word, but it sounds good. So there's the nudnik. And somebody else seated next to the nudnik says, you know, you're going to eat all the rest of the soup that didn't spill. I mean, you know, you're going to go home, change your clothes, but there's soup there. Can I have the rest of it? That's the schnorrer.
That's the schnorrer.
The schnorrer is asking, right. Somebody just comes up, picks up the bowl, drinks it down. That is the chazer.
That's the chazer. I love it. I love it.
Now, while the chazer is drinking the soup, he doesn't notice, but somebody comes along from behind him and steals his wallet.
Oh, that's the ganef.
That's the ganef.
Uh-huh.
And
see?
Ganef is a good word.
There you go.
You know, I live in Berkeley, and across the bay when I used to live in San Francisco, there was a car dealership called Ganef Motors.
Oh, boy.
And people would go in not knowing. Now that's the sort of the beginning of the stories, but, of course, it's always the digressions. For example, somebody would say, well, what kind of soup was it? You know, because we have this Talmudic interpretation of everything. They say, well, it was, of course, chicken soup with a matzo ball. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then somebody else will say, yes, it was chicken soup with a matzo ball. But who was it that had the authoritative comment about matzo balls? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And this is a question they can ponder and ponder and ponder. And it's a tough one among the Talmudic crowd, because the very best comment ever made about matzo balls was actually made by a non-Jew. It was made by Marilyn Monroe.
No kidding.
That she had married Arthur Miller.
Wow, yes.
And she went to his house for Passover. And, of course, for Passover they had matzo ball soup. Mm-hmm. The next day they had leftover matzo ball soup. And the next day, leftover matzo ball soup. And after 3 days, she said, don't they eat any other part of the matzo? So the beauty is these characters all live in Chelm. And what I love about Yiddish, you know, I mean, you're on What's My Story, and you're always exploring different kinds of stories. But it's stories have their own way of growing and changing. And, for example, American folklore, well, we have many kinds, of course, but one is the tall tale. And you might say, you know, somebody will say, well, the corn should be knee-high by the
4th of July.
4th of July. And somebody else will say, yeah, yeah, you know, the corn was as high as an
elephant's eye?
That's right. And somebody will say, no, no, the corn grew so tall, it reached up to the sky, and when it got near the sun, it began to pop and came down, and the animals thought it was snow, and they began to freeze to death. That's growth of story and folklore exaggeration.
Yeah. Yes.
But, and it's not a Jewish story without a but, but Yiddish and Jewish storytelling goes by correction. Right? Mm-hmm. So somebody will say something and say that's very, very good, but it's wrong. I was telling stories in Israel about King Solomon. Somebody said, no, no, I knew King Solomon. He was a friend of mine. Let me tell you how that story goes. And they'll just stand and correct. So with Yiddish and these definitions, I was once going through Shlemiel, Shlemazel, Nebish, Nudnik, Schnorr, the whole business, and somebody stood up and said, that's very nice, Mr. Storyteller, but it's wrong. Which is exactly, you know, the Jewish way to start a story. That's very nice, but it's wrong, right? And I said, did I get it mixed up? Shlemiel, Shlemazel? He said, no. He said, I'll tell you what a Shlemiel is, and then I tell you what a Shlemazel is.
Right after I tell you that you're a putz, right?
Start me on politics because I have I have thoughts of that. But he stood up. He said, I said, did I mix up Shlemiel and Shlemazel? He said, I'll tell you what a Shlemiel is. I'll tell you what a Shlemazel is. A Shlemiel is somebody who can do nothing right. Everything they try fails. Everything they touch breaks. Everything they do is a disaster. I said, all right, if that's a Shlemiel, then what's a Shlemazel? Who said, a Shlemazel is a Shlemiel who's down on his luck. And then another great Yiddish word that you've heard before and we have occasion to use all the time is chutzpah. Right. You know the classic definition?
No.
No? Really?
Not the classic definition. You mean guts?
Well, that's the translation.
Yeah,
guts or moxie.
Yeah. Okay.
But the classic definition is when, God forbid, a child murders their parents. Oi, we would say oi. And oi, is for your audience who doesn't know, oi is a Yiddish word that literally means oi. It's when a child, chutzpah is when a child murders their parents. And at the trial, the judge says to the judge, judge, have mercy on me. And the judge says, on you? Why? Why? He says, I'm an orphan. This is chutzpah. One more Yiddish word, just because I think it's a word that only exists in Yiddish for this. The relationship of the parents of the bride to the parents of the groom. And that that's a particular kind of relationship. When a bride and groom get married, the parents on both sides have a relationship. And I'll tell you why I love this word and what the word is. The word is malchutunim. The parents of the bride and the parents of the groom become malchutunim. They become part of this extended family. And I got to give a shout-out because I have malchutunim to be in Houston.
Yes, and Mazel Tov. So that's where they come from?
That's where they come from.
Isn't that something? Because I was going to ask you where they come from. Yeah.
Elijah is marrying a woman named Annie who's from... His family is from Texas, and her grandparents, who are just two lovely people, are out there in your listening audience, Dick and Dolly. And I got to say hello to my future Malchutunim in Houston.
And that means you obviously have to be coming here.
I'm hoping so. It's getting closer and closer. I would love to.
Beautiful. That is so wonderful. You know, we're talking about these Yiddish words. When I asked my grandmother about a chutzpah. She said, well, here's a story that will explain what chutzpah is. You know, so I'm 8 years old. I'm listening to the story. She says, there was a guy who gets on a bus. And he walks up to some lady sitting there. And he says, lady, can I have your seat? Because I got something. She says, well, certainly, sir. Yes, you can have my seat. Thank you. The next day, he gets on the same bus, and the same lady is sitting there, and he says, lady, I'm sorry to bother you, but, you know, can I take your seat? Because I got something. She says, yeah, okay, all right, fine, you know, have my seat. And, of course, you know, the third day, he says, lady, I got something. Can I have your seat? And she says, yes, sir, you can have my seat, but I have to ask, what do you got? And he says, chutzpah. You know, so you know, everybody heard that
that's
one comment.
Great,
but, you know,
definition.
That's the whole thing. That's the whole thing. So these are, in short, chelm stories, right? I mean, these really are kind of chelm stories.
They're chelmish. I would say these characters tend to live in chelm.
Have you got a favorite chelm story?
Oh, I've got lots of favorite Chelm stories.
Sure,
whatever
yes.
one I'm telling at the moment is my favorite. But okay. But you were talking about Chaim Yankel before.
Yes.
Who actually went on to become the wisest of the Chalmites.
Of course.
And he would solve difficult questions. For example, they came to Chaim Yankel, and they said, Chaim Yankel, why is it, do you suppose, the days are longer in summer and shorter in winter? And this is a question. This is a question that one could ponder and think about for a long time, especially this time of year when the days are short. Chaim Yankel strokes his beard for a long time. In Chelm, everybody has beards. Men, women, children, dogs, cats, goats. They have an expression. They say, a goat can have a beard, but that does not make him a rabbi. That's what they say. Anyway, he strokes his beard. He says, you know why? Have you noticed summer is hot? Yes. And have you noticed winter is cold? Yes. Well, you see, in summer's hot, the days expand. And in winter's cold, they contract. Now, Chaim Yankel was so wise, and we would say, how wise was he? Well, it's funny you should ask. He was so wise that each night he went to bed with two glasses by the side of his bed. One was a glass of water, and one was empty. And the people of Chelm wondered. They said, why would you do that? Well, tell us why, Chaim Yankel. He said, you know what? He said, I'll tell you. I go to bed each night with two glasses by the side of my bed, one with water, one empty. So if I wake up in the middle of the night and I'm thirsty, I drink the glass of water. But if I wake up and I'm not thirsty, I drink the glass without water.
Yeah.
Now, he would settle disputes, this Chaim Yankel of yours, and it happened once that he went touring the prisons in Chelm. And so many, the prison, it was just one prison. It wasn't a big town. He went touring this prison, and he, and people said, I'm innocent. He came back, he called a meeting of the elders, and he said, Chelmites, you will not believe this. I've been to the prison in Chelm, and many, many people tell me they're innocent. So here's what I propose. We build a second prison in Chelm, one for the innocent, one for the guilty. Now, Chaim Yankel also solved another problem around justice. Only once was there actually a murder in Chelm. Again, we would say, oi. It was the blacksmith, and he got into a fight with his customer, and he killed him with a poker. It was terrible. He was guilty. And Chelm, being Chelm, the penalty for murder is the death penalty. But, and it's not a Jewish story without a but, the problem is they had only one blacksmith. And if they killed him, they wouldn't have any. So they thought and pondered what to do, and finally they turned to Chaim Yankel, who said, you know what? We can't kill the blacksmith. We have only one, but we have two shoemakers. We'll kill one of them instead. So they went to the shoemaker and said, look, as long as you're dying for a crime you didn't commit, how would you like to be killed? He said, well, if you give my choice, old age. And, you know, he lives there still.
Now, Eric, you know, did his homework here. He knows about the whole background of Helm. Tell us, you know, tell us about the angel.
Yes.
I mean, because I think because the audience has to know this.
You know the origins of Joel. I'll try to of Helm, Joel.
Nobody knows. Jews don't know this. We went to Hebrew school. We don't know anything.
But I'll tell you. I spent half the afternoon learning to pronounce Helm.
Oh, good. It's
pretty good.
Clear now, isn't it?
That's pretty good.
Helm.
Yeah.
Okay. Uh-huh. Okay, Joel.
I'm going to put you on next December so you can say Happy Hanukkah.
Hanukkah.
We have nobody who can do that other than me.
Okay, the origins of Helm, apparently, God sent an angel with a large bag of foolish souls to spread throughout the entire earth.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
This angel tripped and fell, and all of these foolish souls fell into the same place, and that place became the town of Helm.
Very
Am I close?
Good. That is very good. That is very, very good.
That is.
And now I want to take this a step further. Joel, I've got this game that I got to play.
Okay. All right.
Okay. It's called Why Yiddish Says All. Okay, now here's what I got. I got a few Yiddish words here, and I'm going to do my best to use the kind of vocal expression and cadence to make this word come to life to demonstrate the universality of it all. I'm going to put it in a sentence. I'm going to ask the cast of characters in front of me. I've got Justin, I've got Tatiana, I've got Eric, and Eric is the best subject. He's from Montana. Okay? Need I say more? If Eric can figure this out, so can you, because you know what? Can't make it in New York, can't make it anywhere. If Eric can do it, you can do it. Okay, here we go. Ready?
All right,
here we go. Eric?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I know that you're smart and you're interesting and you do a lot of good things, but you know, sometimes you have kind of mashuga.
Mashuga is crazy.
All right.
Yeah.
And he has no dictionary in front of him. All right, Justin, this is coming at you.
Okay.
Justin is thinking we have a foreign storytelling episode going on here. He thinks, where are you, Yugoslavia? All right, here's one for you. You ready, Justin?
I am.
All right. Justin, listen, I want you to come with me tomorrow when I run some errands. So just kind of schlep along.
Tag along.
Okay. Right. I accept that. Very, 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 very good. Well, here's one that's a little bit more challenging. Tatiana, you ready?
No. Oy vey.
You're a master's.
Oy vey.
That's
a good
start. Very good. Well, you're a master's degree student. You can figure this one out. Okay, here we go. You know, I was listening to some real gossip the other day between this professor and a student, this weird affair going on, and it's become a real shonda.
Like a scandal?
Oh my God!
Yes,
I can't believe it. I mean that's the exact definition. And frankly, that wasn't even a great sentence. That's very good. That was really good, really, really good. I got one more. That's all. You guys are too good for me. You know, I really want a piece of cake tonight. I love dessert, but I just want
a bissel. Just a slice.
You're close. It's a little bit.
A little bit.
Very good. Give him a round of applause.
Yay.
You guys are incredible. I got to tell you, you are very, very, very good. Very, very good.
Just a couple of putzes here.
Now, Herschel of Ostropol. Am I pronouncing that correctly, Joel?
You are, yes.
You know, the tragic gesture to Rabbi Baruch is a prominent figure in Jewish folklore. Tell us about these characters before moving into a few stories.
Oh, all right. You know, we hear Jewish tradition, they're always quoting wise, learned rabbis. The most quoted and celebrated of all is Rabbi Israel, the Baal Shem Tov. It means master of the good name or master of God's secret name. And everything he did turned into a miracle. And there's books of stories of him. And after his past, the lineage sort of passed down and down and down through the generations, and his grandson, Rabbi Baruch, who you never hear about, was less celebrated. In fact, Rabbi Baruch had a tendency to be very angry, and in his rabbinic court, he would always make the wrong decisions. And he was the subject of a lot of derision, and he was just not a nice guy on all accounts. And he got this idea. There was somebody in the little village of Ostropol in the Ukraine, and back when it was called the Ukraine, the is gone, and now Ukraine seems to somehow play a huge role in our psychic consciousness these days, but it was the Ukraine at the time, as they called it. Anyways, in the little village of Ostropol, there was Herschel, who was sort of a funny guy. And he thought, you know what I'll do is I'll bring Herschel in my court. He'll distract people so that when I make foolish decisions and when I lose my temper, they'll look at him and laugh instead of me. And as, of course, as you can tell, Herschel spent his entire time making Rabbi Baruch the butt of all of his jokes, right? So, and it lasted throughout his life. And Herschel was constantly broke and constantly living by his wits. He was always hungry. He couldn't afford even a bissel. In fact, the only time he ever had money at all was when he borrowed money. And it happened one year for Hanukkah. He went to another village because he had to go, like, off through the woods to another village to somebody who would loan him money, because nobody who'd loaned him money before would ever loan him money again. He borrowed 200 rubles from a friend. This was enough to buy Hanukkah gifts. It was enough to buy Hanukkah gelt and candles. The whole gelt, like the chocolate coins, are just going. It was a machaya, meaning a delight. And he's walking through the woods counting his money, when suddenly out jumps a robber, points a gun at him, and says, "Give me your money." "Oi, what can you do?" The guy has a gun. He gives him the money. The robber turns to leave, and Herschel says, wait a minute, one thing. Mr. Robber, you're a robber, and I know it's your job to rob me. I understand that, but what about me? What am I supposed to say when I get home to my wife and I have nothing? She knows I was going to borrow money. When I come without money, what do I say?" The robber says, "Well, tell her you were robbed." Herschel said, that won't work, because I'm often lying, and she won't believe me. And besides, I don't look like I'm robbed. And the robber says, well, what do you want me to do? Herschel says, "You know, it would help if I could ask you a favor, if you could shoot me." "Shoot you? I mean, don't shoot me. Shoot my coat. And that way I can tell her the whole story, and she'll see the hole in the coat, and then she'll know I was robbed." And so, Robert takes out a gun. Herschel lifts up his coat. Bang. Shoots through the coat. "Do it again. Bang. One more time. Bang." Shoots through the coat. He said, "That's good. But, you know, this side has so many holes in it that you can hardly tell. Let's do it on this side." He tips up the other side. Bang. Bang. "One more. Bang." He said, "This is good. This is perfect. One more for good measure." The robber says, "I'm sorry, I can't." "What do you mean you can't?" "Just one more, and then she'll believe me." "No, I can't. I'm out of bullets." "Out of bullets? Out of bullets?" And with this, Herschel takes a stick, bonks him over the head, takes his money, and goes home. Now, Herschel spent his whole life making jokes until finally, at the very, very end, He was surrounded. Rabbi Baruch was there. Everyone was there. And Rabbi Baruch said, "Now, Herschel, will you finally be serious?" And Herschel said, "Why start now?" He said, "Herschel, in just a few minutes, the angel of death will come to you. He'll ask you your name. What will you say?" He said, "I'll tell him it's Moses." "But it's not. It's Herschel. So if you knew, why did you ask?" He said, "Herschel, the angel of death will ask you what you have done to mend your ways, to mend the world. What will you say?" He said, I'll tell him I've mended my socks." And with that, Herschel's eyes began to glaze over. He said, I'm dying now, but I have one last request." They gathered in close. He said, "I beg of you, please. When you go to put me in my coffin, please do not hold me under my arms." And with that, he closed his eyes and died. And there was a pause for a moment, and everyone said, Herschel, why? And from the world beyond, he opened his eyes and said, "You know, I've always been a little ticklish there." And so he died with a joke on his lips. I do have to say,
love it.
I mean, we talked about humor, healing, and humor and sorrow goes together. Herschel's been on my mind a lot lately because my dog just died recently.
Oh, no.
And my dog was named Herschel. This is a Cavalier King Charles Spaniel.
Yes.
You can picture If you know Lady and the Tramp, it looks like Lady.
Yeah.
This dog came to us, and we'd never seen anything like it. He was happy. He was bouncing. He was delightful as a puppy, filled with joy 24/7. He had no idea of the pain and suffering in the world.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to give him a Jewish name, and we named him Herschel.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't impact him. So what I did was I would take him, because I said, we need to balance this out. And I would actually sit and play Leonard Cohen for him, just to help bring him down a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it didn't. He was happy and delightful and joyous till the day he died, just a month ago now.
Oh, my gosh.
We miss him. You know what I'll do is I'll send you a picture after we're done talking.
I want you to. You know,
we're
all dog people. I mean, you have no idea who you're talking to. We are all dog people. Mm-hmm. More than you can ever imagine. So many of my stories are about my dogs, and oh my gosh, that is so sad.
Well,
you know,
it is, and this laughing and crying going together. This is what Jewish humor is about.
It really is. It really is. And you know, lessons in the stories that we are enjoying tonight, thanks to you, are parables that really must be heard. You know, in Judaism, lessons learned when faced with struggles, fears, and sometimes loss in faith really do need to be received. I mean, we have to be able to tell people things, right? You know, it's like the 93-year-old man who goes into confession. And he says, well, you knew that I was heading toward a story. Come on.
Oh,
you
know, I know three different stories like this.
I know. It's like you're looking in the mirror. I know. Only I'm not as good. So this, you know, he goes into church and he tells the priest, excuse me, Father, I have sinned. It's been 9 years since my last confession. I'm 93 years old, and I really need to confess. And the priest says, what have you done, my son? He says, well, last week I had an affair with three married women. And the priest says, well, why are you telling me, my son? He says, hell, I'm telling everybody. Okay, so there we go. Yeah, this is Hank Rubicek, Eric Heat, and Tatiana Gago with Justin O'Neill. And you are absolutely enjoying So What's Your Story with special guest storyteller Joel Ben Izzy, telling us why Jewish humor is based on the premise that we only laugh when it hurts on Pacifica, KPFT Houston, and 91.9 on the dial for our friends in Huntsville. I also want to mention that the great mission of Pacifica started at KPFA in Berkeley, where Joel is right now delivering his astonishing stories. So there's a huge shout out to our sister station, KPFA, for being the seed of free expression on the air. Now,
and
Justin,
I might mention, if I could, you know,
please,
when I was just getting started out, the first shows that I did were on KPFA here in Berkeley. And I came, and because I wasn't used to being on the radio and telling stories alone, I had all sorts of puppets I brought with me, and I positioned them around the studio.
Oh,
this is the old studio, still on Martin Luther King. But I positioned them around the studio so I would have an audience there. I have really fond memories of KPFA.
Great. That's a great idea. I love it. Love it. You know, having faces. Speaking of a face, Justin, you're looking at me. Isn't it my time? Yes, it is. Justin, you were trained by the best, Tatiana, resulting in flawless expression. So why don't you tell us about the world of Houston storytelling flawlessly? Is that offer you every pressure at all?
A little bit.
That's good. Well, that was my goal.
All right. So our sponsor is the Houston Storytellers Guild. It is a great place to start because it is a great place to learn how to craft stories. They meet on the fourth Tuesday of every month from 7 to 8:30 p.m. at Temple Emmanuel, located at 1500 Sunset. They kick off the new year with their neck swap on January 28th and bring a friend. Maybe make it a date night. Visit the Guild's website at www.houstonstorytellers.org. for information about all of their upcoming events. And while you're on the Guild's page, why not become a member? It's easy to do online. Also, listen to some of our past So What's Your Story programs, every show since 2008, all listed under radio program. Don't own a radio? No problem, because you can listen to us stream live on kpft.org and Facebook, and we're also on YouTube. We're all over the place. We'd also like you to suggest program ideas when visiting our So What's Your Story Facebook page, and be sure to share it with friends. And we'd love it if you like us when you leave. Got guests to suggest? Maybe yourself? Let us know by dropping us a note at story@kpft.org, and we promise to get back to you. Don't forget our friends at The Moth at Warehouse Live the second Tuesday of the month, where you'll enjoy some terrific stories. Next one is January 14th, and the theme is adventures. And for our listeners who want to take their storytelling skills to the next level, why not become a member of the Tejas Storytelling Association and the National Storytelling Network? Both happen to be staunch supporters of our program.
Hey, Justin and Tatiana, as you know, a few Houston storytellers will be telling stories at Wimberley's first storytelling festival on Saturday, February 22nd. Now, we got a little jingle here to advertise that festival. And last week, we had some technical difficulties, you might recall. There we go. Could you crank that up now?
The Storytelling Festival in beautiful Wimberley. Everyone has a story to tell. It's a tradition as old as time. Wimberley's first storytelling fest invites you to come, listen, laugh, and learn. Look at us. We're bringing storytellers in from all over Texas. Houston, Austin, San Antonio, and the Hill Country, too. Famous tellers, award-winning PBSers, indigenous elders, and local jawboners. We'll see you at 7A Ranch Opera House on 2/22/2020.
2/22/2020. The Storytelling Festival in beautiful Wimberley.
And the first thing you know, old Jed's a millionaire. The kinfolk said, Jed, move away from here. That's what it reminds me of.
Jed, move away from here.
I love it. And I can't wait to do that. I can't not wait. I'm looking forward to it. I'm going to be one of the tellers at Wimberley, and so many of us who've been on the show will be, and that is going to be a lot of fun. Next week, Greg will host a famous face, author, and movie producer, Rocky Lang, with some far-out stories that you're not going to want to miss. And it's only on So What's Your Story on 90.1 FM. But why in the world would you want to miss any of these shows? Joel, you have a set of Nasruddin stories, which you say are best told in threes. In fact, you claim seven is a better number. Now, who's this guy, and why the defined number?
Well, you know, I started thinking about humor, and the beautiful thing about stories is they jump from culture to culture. And I would say Nasruddin is a character. He's best known in Muslim culture, Sufi culture, the Sufi, the sort of mystic branch of Islam. But really, he's the most famous trickster in the world. And he has different names. He's called sometimes Mullah, meaning teacher, or Nasruddin, or Nasr el-Din, or Hodja, or Joha. He's known in North Africa, in India, in China, though originally it's said that he's from Turkey. That's what people tend to agree. And in fact, they say that he has a grave there, a huge gate and a lock on the gate, but no fence around it. So anybody can just walk right in, but there's this locked gate that has no fence. He's like a cousin of Nasruddin, I think. And many of the same stories are told. And as to why it's threes or sevens, you know, in Morocco they will just count off seven Nasruddins right up, up, up. They're very short like that. And a Turkish storyteller I met, and I was performing in Belfast last year, and went to Ballymena in Northern Ireland. And she lives in Dublin, but she came and she said, well, you want to do at least three. But you ask, why three? Why seven? I guess maybe I'm working on, I'm thinking through my hat here. I guess maybe three because it's an odd number and he's an odd character. And three or seven because those are prime numbers and he's a prime example of a wise fool.
Fair enough.
He's always pictured riding a donkey. And yet when you see him, he's sitting on the donkey, but the donkey is facing forwards, and he's facing backwards. And there's something to be said about that. So let me give you just a few quick examples of Nasruddin here. Let's see if I can squeeze in seven little stories here. You know, they say Nasruddin was seen in the marketplace, and he was seen in the marketplace standing on one foot, clicking his tongue like a chicken, buck, 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 and scattering sand all around. Buck, 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 buck. And they said, Nasruddin, what are you doing? He said, what am I doing? I'm scattering sand to keep the sharks away. They said, Nasruddin, we're in the middle of a desert. There are no sharks anywhere near here. Very effective, isn't it? Now, Nasruddin in that same marketplace was once tracked down by a student. Nasruddin, for some reason, was sitting down atop a pile of banana peels. And the student said, oh, great, wise Nasruddin, can you tell us the secret that everyone seeks, the one we all ask, that is, what is the secret of happiness? Nasruddin says, ah, the secret of happiness is good judgment. Student nods, goes off, comes back in a minute, says, yes, the secret of happiness is good judgment. But how do we come to have good judgment? Says Nasruddin. We have good judgment from experience. Ah, yes, experience. Student goes off and comes back and says, but tell me, how do we come to have experience? Nasruddin says, bad judgment. So now in the same marketplace, Nasruddin is wandering along. A lot of things happen in the marketplace. Nasruddin's wandering along, and he comes, and what does he see? But people are sitting arguing about something. He says, what, my friends, are you arguing about? And they look at something, and what they show me, they say, we do not know what this is. And they show him a little round box, and it has a needle in the middle of it. He said, whichever way you turn the little round box, the needle points in the same direction, and we do not understand what this is. Nasruddin, he looks at this, and he begins to laugh, and he laughs and laughs, and he's laughing, rolling on the floor, and they say, why are you laughing? But then they look and they realize he's not laughing. He's crying. Tears are streaming down his face. He's weeping. And then a moment later, he's laughing again, then weeping again. He goes back and forth laughing and weeping, and they finally say, Nasruddin, please, you look at this thing. We don't know what it is. And then you laugh, and then you weep. Why? He said, I will tell you why. He will tell you why. He said, I laugh because I come to this place, and I live among such fools who look at this thing, and not one of you knows what it is. And I laugh, and I think it's ridiculous. It's crazy. It's insane. And I just have to laugh. And they understand. And finally they say, but why then are you crying? Because I also do not know what it is. Now, Nasruddin, even though he's a great wise trickster, doesn't look like one. He looks like what we would call in Yiddish a zhlub. And your Yiddish students there will know zhlub at this point. It looks like a zhlub. And so the attendant of the bathhouse throws him a dirty towel and says, you go there, sit at the end. It's the place I haven't cleaned yet. Nasruddin takes his bath at the bathhouse. And when he comes back, he says, the attendant, I have something for you. Attendant says, yeah, what's that? He brings out from his purse a gold coin. The attendant looks at this and says, why, thank you. Thank you very much. When Nasruddin comes back the next week, what kind of service do you think he gets? Greetings, Mullah Nasruddin. I've been waiting for you. I have saved you the finest place in the house. Here are several towels. I have fresh fruit for you. Let me remove your shoes and wash your feet for you. Let me know if there's anything I need. Nasruddin has a wonderful time at the bath. And finally, when the attendant goes to, when he goes to leave, the attendant holds out his hand and says, and was everything to your liking? Yes, there was. Was there anything else? No, nothing else. Are you sure? Nasruddin reaches in his purse and says, oh, I have something for you. Ah, what's that? This time Nasruddin takes out a copper coin, like a penny, and gives it to him. The attendant looks and says, this? Well, what is this for? Nasruddin says, this is for last week. That was for this week. Now, the beauty of Nasruddin is he's not just an all-perfect wise teacher. He's He's a bizarre character, and people walk by his house one day and they hear this horrible screeching noise. They knock on his door. They say, "Nasruddin, Nasruddin, what is that? What do we hear?" And he says, "Oh, I am just giving my cat a bath." And you may be dog lovers on the show, but you know you don't give cats a bath, right? And they say, no, Nasruddin, you do not give a cat a bath.
Right.
For a cat, a drop of water is like poison. No bath for the cat. Nasruddin says, oh, well, thank you. They go off, and when they come by later, they see Nasruddin sitting on the steps to the front of his house and in tears, and they say, Nasruddin, what is wrong? He said, my cat is dead. Oh, Nasruddin, this is so terrible. Can we ask what happened? He said, oh, it's terrible. And they say, Nasruddin, we did talk to you about giving your cat a bath. Was that what did it? Nasruddin said, no, it was not giving him the bath. It was wringing him out afterwards.
Oh.
It did it. So there's one Nasruddin, yeah. But then a Nasruddin story that I always love concerns Nasruddin in the mosque. You know, tomorrow is Friday. It's Friday morning, which is a Muslim holy day. And Nasruddin teaches in a little mosque. He has a small crowd. And he says, my friends, before I give to you the teaching, let me ask of you a question. Who among you knows what it is about which I am about to speak? Well, no one knows. So they look at each other and they shrug their shoulders. He said, oh, my friends, if you do not even know what I am talking about, there's no point in my telling you, is there? And he leaves. They say afterwards, they say, Nasruddin, he's up to one of his tricks, yeah? And the next week, that little mosque is packed. And he goes through the service, and then he comes to the teacher and says, my friends, before I give you the teaching, let me ask of you a question. Who among you knows what it is about which I am about to speak? Well, they don't know what he's going to say, but they remember what happened last week, when they all shrugged their shoulders, and he left. And so this time they raise their hands and say, oh, yes, we know very well, Nasruddin, we know very well, yes, please, yes. And he says, oh, my friends, if you know what it is that I'm going to say, there's no point in my saying it, is there? And he left. The next week, that mosque was packed, people were looking in the windows, and he said, my friends, before I give you the teaching, let me ask of you a question. Who among you knows what it is about which I am about to speak? Well, they still don't know what he's going to say, but they remember what happened the week before when they raised their hands, then he left. They remember what happened 2 weeks before when they shrugged their shoulders, and he left. So now they look back and forth, and some raise their hands and say, yes, we know, Nasruddin. Some shrug their shoulders and say, how do we know? We can't know. You haven't told us. And he looks and says, ah, now this is interesting. For I see that perhaps half of you know what it is I'm about to say, and the other half do not. So if you please, the half that knows, teach the other half, and you'll save us all a lot of time. And he left.
Yes.
One more to make seven. A full set of seven. I love doing a full set of seven. And this one I heard from that Turkish storyteller who came to Ireland. It stuck with me since. She was saying how Nasruddin one time lost his donkey. And there was a huge panic. He loved his donkey, and he walked all over looking for it. He couldn't find it anywhere. There was no sign. And finally he came up with a plan. He would make a sign. And so he took a crayon, he drew on this piece of paper and drew a picture of the donkey, and it said, lost donkey. And then big letters, reward. Whoever finds my donkey can keep it. And they said, Nasruddin, what are you doing? You love your donkey more than your wife. What do you mean? He said, I have learned two things in life. One, we must always look to find that thing that we love and we have lost. Oh. And two, we must be ready to give it away.
Love and lost and give it away. That is so poignant. You know, these stories, I want people out there to understand that, you know, some people think, I need a lot of time to tell a story. I need 8 minutes, 10 minutes. You don't need that. And what I find so unique about these stories, and I want you to chime in here in a moment, Eric, you know, we have our tricksters, we have our punchlines, we have stories that sound like jokes, but there's so much more. Now, Eric is very humble. He really is. He's an author. He's one of the best storytellers I've ever heard, and I want him to chime in. What do you think of these stories?
These stories, I love them because they just generate story after story.
They do.
Joel tells one, and it just...
It does.
Reminds you of another one.
It does. It does. And if it doesn't remind you of one, it reminds you how to create one,
And I love the logic. I mean, the logic is so simple and so twisted, at this, especially those Helm stories.
Yeah, I know. They're pretty twisted. I know.
Yeah.
They're weird.
Yeah, I read
in
that.
In a wonderful way.
Helmites really don't let logic get in the way of a good idea.
I think that's kind of the beauty of Helm. You know, different cultures have different stories of silly characters, but Helmites are a particular kind of overly intellectualized silly. And in fact, somebody wrote to me recently, and he was from Lublin, another town, and he said, as a Polish Jew, I must tell you that the Helm stories are true. And I wrote and said, really, why? He said he was in a displaced person camp after the war, and and they took the children on a tour, like a boat tour one day, to explore this city. And then the boat was to come pick them back. Mm-hmm. And he said, there was a Helmite boy that I spent the day with. And when the boat came to take us back, he looked, he said, that's not our boat. And I said, how do you know it's not our boat? It looks like our boat. And he said, no, our boat was going the other way.
You know, but these are wonderful. I mean, I know I keep saying that, but and there are a lot of other descriptors. But, you know, when I do workshops, I sometimes tell participants one way to learn to craft a story is not unlike what so many of these Helm stories sound like. I ask them, do you have a joke? You know, do you have a joke that has any meaning? Rather than simply giving us the joke or the punchline, tell us a story that kind of wraps around us. Does that make sense, Joel? You know, just kind of wrap. Like, for example, and I really wasn't planning this, honest. You're looking at me like, oh, here comes a joke. No. But the other day, true story, the other day somebody asked me about change. I don't know what came up, but we were talking about the concept of change. And I was saying that, you know, all that change isn't all that great. I think it was right after the New Year's. And I said, so far, I prefer the 20th century. I don't know, something like that. And he said, I don't know, I think change is great. And I said, well, you know, there was a 45-year-old guy who had a heart attack, and he was near death, and he met God. And he says to God, God, what are you doing? I'm a young man. I have a family. I have friends. I've never really been sick. I have a long life ahead of me. Why are you planning on taking it in any moment now? And God says, you know what? You make a good point. I mean, I've got a job to do, and unfortunately, it's not a pleasant one oftentimes. But you know what? You're making a good point. You are a young man. And you know what? Go back to life. I'm going to give you another 45 years. How's that? And the guy says, really? He says, yeah, I'm God. I can do whatever I want. So he's, you know, he goes back and he's happy. He's feeling great. And in order to celebrate his life, he does things differently. He gets his hair transplant. He changes his diet. He loses weight, right? He joins these clubs and organizations. He goes to the gym and works out. He is incredible. But one day he comes out of the gym, and he's run over by an ambulance, and he dies. And he's up in heaven, and he says to God, God, don't you remember me? You gave me another 45 years. What is going on? And God turns to him and says, tell you the truth, I didn't recognize you. So, you know, the notion is that, is change all that good? Right, Tatiana? She's going, she's just moaning. You don't have to moan. Joel, you know, last month on this program, you told about your darker days when you were diagnosed with thyroid cancer, and this seemingly desperate time inspired The Beggar King, which is a soulful collection of stories which blend original versions, shorter renderings of the longer ones that you assembled based on your cultural experiences. And you say, sit back and let me tell you a tale of a journey that took me through dark times, a tale of lost horses and found wisdom, of buried treasures and wild strawberries, and The Beggar King and the Secret of Happiness. I have my favorites. It's the strawberry. Tatiana loves the cricket. Right, Tatiana?
Yes, I absolutely
love it. Tell us why. Tell Joel why. Well, always talk about that story.
Well, I think that was one of the stories that came that had me really go into storytelling. But, you know, other than it being a really sweet tale, it's short and also has a profound meaning.
Yeah,
I think it's really relatable because, you know, we have... Some of us have these dreams and that are considered maybe too ambitious, and people think that we're insane, and then, you know, until it actually happens.
Yeah.
And then that's what exactly happens and to the cricket who wants to go to the moon. What did he do? He went to the moon.
Yeah, it is such, you know, I don't want to keep our audience wondering, what are they talking about? And I don't know if we have time to tell the entire story, but it's about a cricket that wanted to...
I can do a short telling if you want.
Can you do like a 90-second version?
Yeah, I can totally do that. Tatiana, that's so sweet. Thank you. I really appreciate that.
You have no idea, really, how much my students love that book, Joel, and that is no hyperbole. That is the truth.
Oh, well, thank you. And this story was written, actually, not a folk tale. I wrote it myself for a particular purpose, inspired by several folk tales, but it tells of a cricket who dreamed of jumping to the moon. And he wanted nothing more than look down from the moon and see the earth. And every night he jumped and maybe got as high as the branches of a tree, but never close to the moon. And all the other crickets laughed. They said, "The moon, that's ridiculous. It's impossible." But he kept on jumping and jumping, and eventually his knees grew weak from hard landing, and he couldn't jump, but he'd still try. And the other crickets all told jokes about him, and he kept on trying. Finally, he died. And even after he was gone, the jokes remained, and the jokes grew longer and turned into stories. And the stories, well, they were passed from one generation to the next, and the crickets eventually wove them into their songs. And to this day, you can hear them sing of his adventures at night on a warm night, and the crickets are looking up. And as they look up, look, the cricket parents will say to their children, "There he is, look at the moon. See that face on the moon? That's the cricket. It's the cricket who jumped to the moon." And so it was, after so many years, his dream came true.
Oh, you made one young lady extremely happy. And all of us, because you are who you are, and we have the honor of calling you a friend. The website for Mr. Joel Ben-Izzy is storypage.com. Joel, is your Machatonim listening tonight, I hope?
They are, Dick and Dottie, and I wish them both well. They're lovely, lovely people who've done wonderful things in Houston at the zoo and with birds. He's an architect. They're just lovely people, so I send them my love.
And obviously this is not the last time you're going to be on, and I want you to send us a picture of your dog.
I will, of Herschel. I will send it right after this. We can put it up on the website.
Please, please do. Joel, you know, I am so frustrated when you're on because this show goes so damn fast.
Yeah.
And Eric, I mean, it's ridiculous. But thank you for your wit and your wisdom and for your generosity of heart and for agreeing to join us again on So What's Your Story. Just incredible. Just incredible.
Well, thank you for having me. You know, telling a story is a help in itself, as they say.
But you're just the best. You're the best. Look, you know, tonight, to kind of put us in the spirit of the new year and of laughter, let's listen to Shiny Happy People Holding Hands by R.E.M. Right, Justin? Don't you dare move, anybody, because Lars is up next with a sweet mix of singer-songwriters on the Venison Tape Deck. Be sure to make 90.1 a part of your everyday life. And while you're driving home, turning in for the night, or just chilling, join us every Thursday at 8 for So What's Your Story and Treasure What You Hear. You keep loving a great story, everyone, and we're going to keep bringing them to you. This is Dr. Hank, and along with the rest of the So What's Your Story team, we absolutely never want you to forget that it is never too late to live happily ever after. Peace.
KPFT makes a difference with real people, real stories, and real voices.
I was put in a room where I was